So.
Yeah, and I didn't consult my Farmer's Almanac, tragically.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you were young growing out there in the western wilds of Pennsylvania, did you have some Farmer Almanacs laying around the kitchen?
Not my kitchen, but I'm sure that people did.
I was just wondering how rural you really were, Grace.
I don't think people really use that.
Not even the farmers.
That's like snipe hunting. I believe that's just an urban legend that we tell, you know, you city folk.
Yeah, I said, well, I don't know. The set the Farmer's Almanac says it's going to snow a lot. I don't know.
Right, let's go tip some cows and check the Farmer's Almanac. I don't think it's real.
Right. Hi, my name's Alan McNish, and this is FormulaOneBlog.com.
I'm David Hobbs, and this is FormulaOneBlog.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Matchett, and you're listening to FormulaOneBlog.com.
You're listening to the audio journal of F1 Opinion, FormulaOneBlog.com podcast.
Me at FormulaOneBlog.com for podcast number 499. This is Todd.
No, Todd, not now.
A.K.A. Negative Camber. And tonight, for your kind consideration, penalties and more penalties, Ferrari's Italian-ness, Braun talk, and Williams F1's rich kid. But before covering all that nonsense this evening, I have to introduce my guest tonight, which of course means... What does it mean? That's right. I have to go all the way to the right coast of America, nestled in our nation's capital, where young men and women anxiously await Tuesday, in which they'll all rush down to the polling center and vote in the general election. And I think most of them are voting a write-in candidate this year named Grace. And that doesn't, don't blame them. Because I'm doing the same thing, and that's who's joining me tonight, the lovely, the redoubtable,
Grace!
Grace, how you doing tonight?
We're in trouble if y'all write me in. I ain't prepared to run.
I think you got what we need, Grace. You can fix it.
I don't think that's true.
You're mad with numbers.
I am, but, you know, I can barely fix where I work, let alone the whole government. Come on, man.
I'm thinking,
pretty tall order.
Hey, well, look, we definitely have our survey sorted.
That's right. That's right. We would collect good data, and it would not be influenced by, you know, political means. So
there you go.
That I can promise.
There you go. So, Grace, what are you imbibing for tonight's dangerously close to 499 podcast?
Very, very, very close. This evening, I'm drinking, in honor of Paul, I'm drinking a pumpkin ale, a Schlafly's pumpkin ale, which is out of St. Louis. So,
yes, it is out of St. Louis.
Yeah.
I know right where that's. I've been there.
It's very delicious. Their pumpkin is my favorite.
I know those guys. Pumpkin. They owe me $10.
Hey, there you go. They should.
Yeah,
so there you go.
I know.
But I thought, you know, it's crisp outside. The leaves are changing.
Yeah.
Paul hates fruit-flavored beer, so, you know.
Yeah, although I think we've caught him drinking a pumpkin ale a time or two.
See, I think the thing is a pumpkin ale, you can still get a good porter, right? You can still get a nice, you know, hearty feel to it, right?
Yes.
As opposed to, like, you know, a fruit beer, which, you know, you drink in the summer, and it's a Hefeweizen, and it's lemony, and, you know, he's not having any of that.
See, that sounds good to me. But...
Although, but grapefruit was the big flavor this year. I enjoyed the nice.
I had a grapefruit IPA on his behalf this summer.
I thought they were very good.
And it was good, yeah.
I like this grapefruit movement. I'm finally behind something that everybody else thinks is a good idea. That never happened.
Well, don't feel bad, because no matter what I do when it comes to beer, Paul just hammers me.
Yeah, well, he only drinks IPA, so I don't know why.
I know.
Hops.
I know. Really, I should know if I get anything other than IPA, I'm in big trouble with Paul.
Correct.
So I know. So tonight, hey, as I mentioned about Dangerously Close to 500, before we get started in all of the news that we're going to cover this evening, I want to take a moment and make a public announcement, Grace. So this is our breaking news. Well, it's actually BBC's breaking news music, but so this is a breaking news. So I want to share this with our listeners / readers. So this is a special message just for you. Okay, so we are very, very close to our 500th podcast. Now, as you know, this is 499, and you guys are really, really intelligent people, and you'll know that next week is the Brazilian Grand Prix, and that means we're going to have a race review podcast, and that technically will be podcast number 500. However, if you add to that all the downshift episodes I've done, that's nearly 580 podcasts that I've been on, and I've been on every single one of them, and that usually entails 2 to 3 hours per evening for, you know, recording, mixing, posting, editing, all of that good stuff, those shows, and getting them all up for you guys to enjoy. And my guests and co-hosts, like Grace this evening, also have spent serious amounts of their personal life and time on this as well. Now, while our sacrifice, folks, is one thing, this isn't really about us. It's really about you. This is your 500th show. It's not ours. And you're the reason these shows even exist. It's not us. So we wanted to make our 500th show celebration on Podcast 501. We wanted to make our 500th celebration about you. Not a navel-gazing event about us and, lo, aren't we awesome and aren't we worthy of praise and all that. We're not going to do that. That's not how we roll. So we're going to do our race review as our 500th podcast, like we normally do. It's what you expect, and that's what we'll deliver. But just like we normally would do our race review, then on podcast 501, that show will be our celebration show. So we thought long and hard about how we can make this show all about you. And one thing we'd really like to do is hear from you. So here's one of the things we'd like to do for this podcast. Now, this is audience participation, so reaction time's a factor. Please pay attention. So here's how we'd like to do this. If you're a listener or a reader, we thought it might be fun to do this. How about sending us an email answering both of the following questions, just two questions. The first question is, I listen / read FBC because, and then you fill in the rest of that sentence, right? And the next question is, the best thing about the FBC podcast / website is, and you fill in the rest of that question. Now, some of you just listen to the podcast, you don't go to the website and vice versa. That's fine. That's why I put the slashies there. So answer those. Now, we'll take the top responses as judged by our esteemed panel, which may or may not include Grace. I'm not going to tell you who it is. And we're going to read the top comments on our 501st show. So now here's the deal. We aren't just looking for suck-ups here. That's, you know us better than that. That's not how we roll. Snark is always welcome, as Grace would tell you. So, I mean, heartfelt responses, absolutely. Those will be considered too, and we would absolutely appreciate that as well. So, but don't feel like, you know, you got to kiss our you-know-what. In order to get your comments up there. That's not how we roll. So be as snarky as you want to be. Like, I listen to FBC podcasts because there's nothing else on. I like to punish myself for being bad the week previously, whatever. So here's the thing. Here's how to participate. Send me an email, nc@formulaoneblog.com, like negative camber, right? nc@formulaoneblog.com. And in the subject line, put 500. so I know it's about the podcast. Also in the email, let us know who you are and what country you're listening or reading FBC from. I mean, and I know Grace would echo this, it always stuns us to know just how international we are and how many folks listen to us from all around the world. And it's pretty incredible to us. And so that would be awesome. Also, if you are an international listener and not here in the States or North America, don't worry about your English. I get it. It may not be your native tongue. I understand that. Do your best and we'll decipher. We can manage that. We'll decipher if there's, you know, language, you know, mishaps here or there. No big deal. It's not, we're not offended at all. We get it. I can barely speak my own language and I only speak one language. So I get that. Also, if you're not comfortable, send it in your own language and we'll translate it via Google Translate the best we can. And that's it. So it's all good. So if you're an international listener, don't feel like you got to email us in prose perfect English. That's not not a big deal. Now, you're listening to this thinking, oh, well, wait a minute, I'm driving or whatever. I'll post all these instructions on the website in an editorial and a life piece so you can find the email address and the questions and the instructions and all that. So let's do this. I think it would be fun. Let's have some fun. And also, if any of you have other ideas on how we can use the 500th podcast celebration to focus on you, the listener or the reader, let us know. I'd love to hear your ideas as well. So we want to celebrate you. Remember that. This is all about you. It's not us, because this is all about you, and we wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't. So there you go. That's the end of my discussion.
Get to the show!
This is the show!
Okay. We are going to cover some news, Grace.
That's right.
That's what we do. We're going to cover it. Did all that make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. All right.
Email you. Yep. Put 500 in the subject line. Tell us something. Tell us where you're from.
Yeah.
Tell us what you like about the show. And what was the other question? Or those are the two questions. Tell us where you're from. Tell us what you like about the show.
No, I listen to FBC because, and the best thing about FBC is.
There you go.
Yeah.
See, I was kind of paying attention.
Yeah. So they're kind of the same question, but they're actually not, you know? And as a survey expert, you'll know that, you know, you ask kind of two similar questions to get to the real answer, right?
Sure. I don't think that's a thing, but okay, sure.
Gosh, in my head it is. It so is.
I mean, I guess the closest thing is if you know, sometimes you'll ask a question at like question two, and then you ask the same similar question at like question 400 to see if they're.
That's what I'm talking about.
If they agree. Yeah, but usually not like I ask you what you like about the show, and then the next question is, what do you like about the show?
That's what I'm talking about.
Right. You usually try to put some space in there so they forget what their previous answer was.
Right. That's
what we'll go with it. That's totally fine. Yeah.
I'm talking about that kind of survey trickery. It catches me out, man.
There you go.
Yeah. So, okay. So we're going to talk about in the news, we're going to talk about, I'm tongue tied. Gosh, I just did my best Mason Reese there. Borgesmord.
We'll edit this out. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Okay. Max Verstappen. That's what we're talking about. Yeah, oh, speaking of Grace, I didn't want to deprive you of this lovely montage.
Yes, the young Dutchman was a bit annoying out there today.
I don't know. For me, doesn't deserve to be up there with that movie pulled. So
you know what? Here's the message for Charlie. Honestly.
And then he starts shouting on the radio. You know, he's I don't know how many times he's using a very bad language in general. So I think he has to go back to school or something to get some language.
Can I go for a wee?
There you go, Grace.
Hey, I'm a fan of that bad language. I think it's very useful, and it has nothing to do with my schooling.
Right. So I put that little montage together to describe the Mexican Grand Prix weekend and did that for Paul recap. Now, here's the deal. Verstappen, he is not happy with penalties. Here's what Max said. And he said, quote, "The problem with these kind of rules is that they complicate the sport. Ding, 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 ding. For both the viewer and the stewards themselves. That was evident in the Grand Prix of Mexico. Lewis Hamilton cut across the grass at the first corner, was not penalized, fine. But after I did the exact same thing in my flight, my fight with Sebastian Vettel, I got a 5-second penalty and I lost my third place. That is a ridiculous situation. Lewis and I both missed our breaking point in exactly the same corner, just like him. I didn't have any advantage because I went first into the corner and came out first again. That I'm punished, but not Lewis, indicates that there are double standards, end quote. Grace, what do you think about that whole debacle?
Okay, so first of all, of course Max is mad. You know, he just got drugged down pit lane by his ear like he's Kimi Raikkonen's physical therapist, right? So of course, he's not going to be very happy about that. That was super odd, right? That you're just standing there like, oh, hey guys, what's up? What? I'm not supposed to be here? Okay, that's a problem. So, right, that is like the worst way that could have been handled. That said, I think that this is, right, this has been an ongoing issue. This is like, again, this is not the first time that you and I have discussed it. This is not the first time you and Paul have discussed this. It's about the 800th time I feel like we've discussed this, yes. Right? So I think that it comes down to, it's, again, I'm always reminded of Derek Daly when we were in Austin, whatever, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, talking about how hard it is to be a steward, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess I never really thought of it from that perspective that, unlike every other sport, you can't stop the race to go, well, what do you think? He was out? What do you think? Right? You know, like,
yeah, right.
You really have to, like, you know, and he talked about, like, how you'd have two people trying to decide over here what, you know, Verstappen did, and you'd have two guys over here watching the race still, and you're trying to figure out all this stuff, right? Because it's just, it's still going on. There's no pause to review the tape. So I guess when these things come up, I always try to keep that in mind and that I don't like it. I'm sure most fans don't like it, but the stewards aren't consistent and they tend to be Bernie's friends, right? They aren't necessarily people who should be in this situation.
Yeah. So Max said, look, yeah, I respect the penalties, but they have to be the same for everyone.
Right.
And in this case, you watched the Mexican Grand Prix. Let me ask you this, because I know Paul's reaction to this. Paul thought that Lewis deserved a penalty because Paul, as a professional driver, says, mm-hmm. I don't care what you say. When you go off track like that, you get an advantage. This is the way it is. Sorry. In this track limit thing, if you take all four off, you get an advantage. I mean, that's Paul's feeling on it. Now, I'm a little different than that on the Lewis thing in particular. I agree with it on the Max thing. But how did you see it, Grace? When you were watching the race, you feel like, well, he just did what Lewis did, and Lewis didn't get a penalty. Or do you feel like the stewards made the right call there?
So I was getting there. I promise.
Sorry.
It's all right. You know, it's never a short answer. What do you want, right? So I think the other thing is that, so in other sports, right, here, football, basketball, or something like that, you know, I watch a lot of basketball, and I think that's an easy thing for me to translate. I hope other people can follow this. But so in basketball, every time a player travels, you don't call it because otherwise the game would take forever, right? You don't call everything because there's some amount of decision that that referee makes about what I'm going to call and what I'm not going to call and how much I'm going to let them play through the game and how much I'm going to stop things, right? And those referees also have a history with these players. So players are treated differently based on their previous history or what they're kind of like. So because you don't have that kind of consistency in the stewards where you can't have that same thing. But to think that the stewards are ever going to call everything, that's never going to happen. That's refereeing never works that way. And I think especially when you have new people each week, it's really never going to be that way to be able to carry that. So do I think they should have both been penalized? I think that Lewis Hamilton, had Max Verstappen not been penalized, we would not be talking about Lewis Hamilton. Mm-hmm. It is only because both happened. Right. And so right. Then Max Verstappen saying, but he did the same thing. He didn't get penalized. I guess I saw that more as a traveling, right? Like, we're just going to let this play. It's the first corner.
Yep.
You know, we're just going to keep moving here because we can't penalize everything. It becomes too ticky tacky. So we've made a decision that even though that wasn't right, we shouldn't penalize it. But Max Verstappen, we did. But again, right. Had we not both, we wouldn't be talking about Lewis Hamilton.
Right. Which, and you're saying basically what the FIA said about they look, you know, the stewards right. know first lap, first corner, you know.
It's going to be a little dicey.
It's going to be
People are going to fall off the island.
That's right.
That's kind of normal. So
and that's what
you can't.
They said.
Everybody would have a penalty by the time the first lap was over, right?
Right.
So you really, I don't. So then I guess my other point is this is a solvable problem that if the FIA wanted to solve it, they could solve it. Why wouldn't you just put transponders in each of the wheels and then you would electronically know when they fall off the track and you could penalize them? And then you don't need the human element. So I guess to me, removed from this situation, this is a solvable problem that they refuse to solve. So that's that to me is the larger issue, that why do we keep having to have this conversation? Why does the FIA not want to stop this? Why is there not rules that are consistently followed about this that you could solve with a computer that could then tell you, these are all the people that fell off the island, and you could decide who should get penalized, or you could figure out what, you know, and you could change it for every race. You need four tires. They need to be this far off the curb. You could change that.
Yeah.
You don't need eyeballs to do this, but they don't fix it.
Yeah. And I think, well, you're bringing up a good point. And I think basketball is, you know, it's as good as an analogy as any other stick and ball sport.
Sure.
That you could apply to Formula One here on the referee and the traveling issue, because it is rampant in the NBA.
Yeah.
And I think this is, you know, this sentiment, though, is certainly something that's echoed by a lot of F1 fans. And, you know, if you look at a lot of the comments on our website, on social media, certainly it's this lack of consistency. And I've went in length about this on editorials and said the reasons that they are stewards is because they are the heads of motoring clubs in that nation, and those motoring clubs belong to the FIA membership, and they send a lot of money to the FIA, and this is a way of giving back to the motoring clubs. And so then they have a guest driver because they thought having someone, because originally it was just three local dignitaries, motoring
dudes,
club
right.
dudes, right?
Right.
But there was an outrage many years ago, and they thought, okay, well, what if we made one of them a guest driver, right? So they started doing that because the criticism was these people aren't professional drivers.
Right.
They don't know what it's like to pull 4G in a turn like that with a guy on your side, you know? And so they got a professional driver. And I think most fans appreciated that. But even with professional drivers, each driver has a different mentality or different philosophy on professional driving, right? So, and what's acceptable and what's not. Tom Christensen may have something completely different than, as you said, Derek Daly or somebody else. So,
right.
So that creates this inconsistency. And so what I argued in my editorial was just to this point, that when you make the rule in black and white, then you can't ignore the traveling when it's non-consequential to the game, right?
Right.
You can't. And you have to apply it evenly, and for everyone, all 10 teams, all, you know, 22 drivers, it's got to be the same, or you're just going to get complaints and complaints, and it'll get worse and worse and worse over time. And so that's one of the things. Now, the FIA are set up like the way they are. But maybe this is an area that in my most recent editorial, I said, you know, maybe this is just an area, Grace, for this cry for consistency where the FIA needs to have a rethink about how they're stewarding. Certainly, Charlie Whiting is the consistent element. And Tim, the last name escapes me now. Gosh, I'm getting old. American guy, FIA. Anyway, yeah. You guys know what I'm talking about. They're at every race, and they're consistent. But you know, maybe they have another look at this to try to improve consistency, because it seems to be this recurring theme that most of the fans talk about. So I don't know.
I mean, plus the other thing is that Charlie Whiting is busy, right? I remember there was a Peter Windsor article from like eons ago about what Charlie Whiting is doing during the race. It's not being a steward, right? He's not, I mean, in a way he's like the head ref. Right. But in other ways, not so much, because really he spends all his time on the phone with the teams, because the teams are calling Charlie going, oh, my God, did you just see what Fernando did? Oh, my God, did you just see what Kimi did? And I think this should be a penalty. I never realized how much he's really just mediating between the teams and what they think should be called and what shouldn't be called. And again, very different than any other sport, because, you know, again, you wouldn't see the coaches talk to the refs, but there's definitely this separation between the refs and, you know, the it's in the rules, right? If you were a ref and you are doing anything, you know, accepting money or finagling with the owners, you'd lose your job.
Yeah.
That separation doesn't exist in Formula One in that same way, that the teams really have access to the head ref. And they're always asking him, why didn't you call that? What should we do about this? Oh, he did this thing. When are you going to call this thing, right? Is this a wet race or not? Should we bring in and get our four tires? Like, they're constantly on the phone with him. I just thought that was such an odd thing. It's refereeing in this sport. And I don't know how much it's like this in other forms of racing. So I always think that's another way of looking at it. Like, what you know, it's not like Formula One is the only form of racing out there.
Yeah,
how
what does
this
the
work?
WEC do or NASCAR? Right. You know, what are their stewarding of the races and what does that look like? And there might be lessons to be learned across other motorsport. You're right. But anyway, Max, you know, basically echoing a lot of what fans are saying, you know, look, yeah, you know, I'll respect them, but they need to be consistent, you know.
But I think that, I think there's another problem. Didn't you, any, there's a Ricciardo quote, no? Is that later in this? Okay. Was that in this article or am I getting ahead of you?
I feel like I'm not. I remember.
All right. Anyway, maybe I just read it. Maybe I just read something. How imagine that, right? Well, anyway, so he talked about gravel traps, right? And that, you know, at least when you fall off the island and you run into a gravel trap, right? It you get stones in your car, and at least that's something, right? Yeah. Whereas if you just roll off into some grass, or even worse, into some pavement, there's really no penalty in falling off the island, right?
Yeah.
And Bernie Eccleston wanted a wall. Let's just build a wall around the whole track, which. Like, you know, Bernie, why don't we just have, I personally think, first of all, that if we're going to go with a wall or like a gravel trap moat, which is the only way you could do that because there's always going to be places where there aren't gravel traps. You know, why don't we just, I think we should go like full like speed racer and have like the gymnastic team penalize you or, you know, sort of a spy hunter and have those little electric things on the end of the do you remember the cars that had the little electric thing that send you spinning off the track or just guys with spears. Like, I feel like if we're gonna go this kind of like let's just put a gravel moat around each track, let's just go full, you know, speed racer spy hunter with our penalty and just really just knock somebody completely off the track. But something like that just isn't I'm sure, I don't know the groundskeeper aspect of it, but I can't imagine the track. You know, the pavement is easy to maintain, right? So I'm sure that that's why tracks use it, because it certainly doesn't peel off the speed like gravel does, which is the point of the kitty litter, right? Or even grass, right? It's to peel off some of that speed before you go running into some barrier. But I just think that there's no way to do it without technology. And I think that's just, I don't know, it's not that hard. You could just do this. And I mean, you're in the IT field, and I know that non-IT people hate it when, or IT people hate it when non-IT people say things like, well, Google can do it, why can't you?
Yeah, right.
But, you know, if my GPS can figure out where I am, I don't know. It just seems like this should be a solvable problem, and then everybody would shut up and you'd have an actual way to referee this. But I do like some crazy ideas, like the gravel trap moat or, you know, guys with spears. I think, just jab your tires and then you won't do it anymore.
I agree. I like the moat with alligators in it idea.
Yeah, see? Yeah. I think that we should really, like, we'll go with a full, like, sprinklers, gold medal, Bernie Eccleston route. Like,
there
let's go as crazy as possible. If we're going to be suggesting how we want to penalize them, I think, yeah, full speed racer. Whatever crazy crap you can come up with, let's do that.
I'm all for it. So anyway, watch this space because Max not happy with the inconsistency. Also in the news, Williams F1 has signed Lance Stroll,
okay,
Canadian young driver, 18 years old, and they have signed him for next year. And he will take Felipe Massa's position. He'll be alongside Valtteri Bottas. Mm-hmm. And the response to this was interesting. Excuse me. The social media response I found interesting because there was this instant wave of sort of harsh things about Lance's dad's wealth and how wealthy his dad was. And, Lawrence Stroll was bought his son's way here and spent a lot of money on his son to get here. And he's a paid driver, and that just caught me off guard. It wasn't the reaction I thought there would be. Lance, he's the 2016 European F3 champ. He's got 14 race wins, 17 front row starts. But you could parse that and say, well, you know, F3 this year hasn't had the competition or whatever. I don't know. Regardless, he signed to Williams alongside Valtteri for 2017. Now, regardless, the German media have pointed to Lawrence Stroll's pocketbook buying the ride by equipping Williams with a brand new simulator and buying the F3 team and staffing it with the best engineers money could buy. And the article says that Lance's dad spent $80 million getting his son into F1. So is Lance a pay driver? Well, sure he is. No question about that. And over his whole course of trying to get in, $80 million, it's a heck of a lot of money, for sure. I think if you juxtapose that with Pastor Maldonado, who had $40 to $50 million a year from PDVSA, how many seasons was he in an F1? That's a lot of money.
Not enough, but go ahead. Not enough right. seasons in F1, not enough money.
Not enough to keep you there, but, you know, that, so... I don't know. This caught me off guard. I wrote a piece on it. You know, I'm not even sure why we're hammering on Lawrence Stroll because he's wealthy. I guess, and he's like, oh, Lance, a pay driver? You're kidding me. A pay driver? No way. And so, you know, I have to think that Nico Rosberg, he's got a dad, KK Rosberg. Think that had anything to do with it? Max Verstappen, he's got a dad, Jos Verstappen. Think that had anything to do with it? Michael Schumacher, he had to buy his ride. Sebastian Vettel. Did too. Ayrton Senna had to pay for a ride. Lewis Hamilton did until he got the attention of McLaren. Then they paid for his ride. Daniel Ricciardo, Mark Webber had to pay for his ride. All of these people were paid drivers. They paid for their rides to get to Formula One. So is this a bad thing? I don't know. I just caught me off guard.
I think that we can all want this to not happen, but it's always going to be it's always going to be in existence, and especially now that there isn't that same pot of like free money like there used to be, right? Mm-hmm. Again, we've had this conversation many times too, but I think that I may not deep down in my heart of hearts like paid drivers, and I'm sure that Frank Williams and everybody at the team wishes they didn't have to have paid drivers. However, that's ridiculous to think they're not. And so it's an expensive sport, right? It's kind of like hockey. Hockey is – it's expensive. There's no way around that. Yeah. If your kid says, hey, dad, I'd really like to play hockey, I can't imagine you don't just see dollar signs, right, going out right. the window, right? It's expensive. It is always going to be a sport of people with means. Racing's even worse because you're always having to, you know, earn sponsor money. You're always trying to get somebody to pay for your ride. And that's just not necessarily the same in, you know, stick and ball sports, right? So Formula One is always going to have people of an upper echelon, people with lots of money, or somebody like Pastor Maldonado, where your country pays for your ride. Right. Pastor Maldonado would still be in the sport if his country still had money, right?
Right.
So I think that to want this to not happen is one thing, but I don't know economically how this has always happened. And it's going to continue to happen in Formula One. You're going to have paid drivers because it's the only way a team that isn't Ferrari or Mercedes, Red Bull, can survive in the sport right. is to take on a paid driver. And they probably don't really like it either, but you need a simulator. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. My son needs a ride. You guys could use a new simulator.
Plus, I think also, right, you want somebody with experience. I guess this is also the hockey thing, right?
That, right.
If you want to play hockey young, if you want to be an NHL player, right, you got to start young, and that's cost your family money. So same thing with racing, right? These guys start karting at like 4. Like I remember Nick Heidfeld, like he was a late bloomer. He started at like 11, right?
Right,
or 14
right.
or something, right? It was like, oh my God, and Nick Heidfeld was successful and he didn't start until he was 11. So these kids are riding karts at like 4. That's a chunk of change, and that's a sacrifice your family's making to go around to all these places, even in a smaller country, you know, like England as opposed to the United States, which is quite large, to put on your family. That, of course, the higher up you get in a series, the more it's going to cost. And if your family is rich, then you don't need as much sponsor money, and that's going to make your trip a lot easier, right? Again, I think in my heart of hearts, maybe I don't like this. But I don't know how else you make it work economically. It's just too darn expensive.
Yeah, it's a very expensive sport, and it's just a reality. It just is. And I, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I think if we all had our druthers, we'd like to not have pay drivers. But that just isn't the situation. On a final note on Williams, good news is that Sir Frank is out of the hospital. He had kind of a pneumonia scare there.
Yeah.
And kind of had us all worried. It's not good at all. So.
Nope.
He's out of hospital, so good news there. Let's go back to Mexico. Let's talk about Sebastian Vettel. He received no penalty for his potty mouth. Now, Vettel's F-bomb towards Charlie Whiting garnered no punishment, as the German wrote a formal apology to both Charlie and the FIA, and the FIA said that's fine. Many folks believed he should have been penalized for the outburst as a clear reflection and sending a message that drivers should not have a lack of respect for the race director and the regulatory body of F1, which is the FIA. Johnny Herbert, very vocal about that, believes he should have been penalized. So did Red Bull's Helmut Marko and Christian Horner, who was lecturing Ferrari over this thing, which prompted Maurizio Arrivabene to say that he doesn't need any lessons from Helmut, and it's all a bunch of bureaucracy, which is actually refreshing, Grace, because in the old days, Ferrari would have used the term polemics.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so where did the horse whisperer go, Grace?
Oh, well, they don't need him now. You know, he went the way of, you know, all those other people that got fired. I don't believe that guy still exists anymore, right? Yeah, exactly. I think Luca D got fired, and so did the horse whisperer, right? Yeah. Okay, so I mean, I think that, right, you can, of course, Red Bull. I mean, that's like if McLaren, this is like McLaren and Ferrari of 10 years ago, right?
Yeah,
if Ferrari
right.
said the sky's blue, McLaren's going to say it's green, and that's, right? So, of course, Red Bull thinks he should be penalized, right? Whether or not one thinks either, so I kind of see these as two issues, right?
Yeah.
One issue is, should a driver use the F-bomb or some other language on a radio? And should they be allowed to, should they say disparaging things towards Charlie Whiting, right?
How the fuck is that possible?
You mean like
well, unless you're Kimi Raikkonen, then it's totally fine. But, but right, I think these are two separate issues here.
Yes.
So. But I think ultimately, I mean, of course, I have a lot more to say about this, but the long story short is, if it's not in the rule book, you can't penalize him for it. Unless it says in the rule book, you can't say these eight things on the radio. I can't penalize you for it. Same thing. If it doesn't say, hey, don't talk about Charlie Whiting like that, I can't penalize you for it.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess you could use some sort of like generic NFL, like, well, this is unsportsmanlike, you know, but we all know that's BS, right?
No, so... you bring up a great point. Let me inject this here.
All right.
You bring up a great point that goes back to my argument about the Verstappen rule, about moving into braking.
Mm-hmm.
That was always an unwritten rule, and there was an umbrella rule about safe driving or something that they could use to penalize drivers if collectively Charlie, the stewards, the other drivers were concerned. It happened with Grosjean. They benched him for a race. It happened with Pastor Maldonado. It's happened with drivers that were way too aggressive and weren't getting the lesson, right? So that's what they've used for a long time back in the Max Mosley days.
Right.
That's what they used. But then they made a rule. They wrote it down, and now you have to enforce it every single time, every single race. And if there's no consistency, everyone's going to get really ticked off, okay? Number one. So here's the point. You're talking about the same thing here, is that they could have used the bringing the sport into disrepute rule.
Right.
Which is
every
a broad umbrella
one of those, right.
that they could do that to, right? And I agree with you, Grace. That's what they should. They shouldn't write it down. You can't say this list of 27 bad words and here's the fines for them. This is ridiculous.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think he should have been penalized for either of these crimes. But, you know, I mean, that's my feeling. And I think that the other side, there has to be some balance, right? Because NASCAR has a family-friendly front to them and anybody can rent a scanner and listen to whoever's radio broadcast they want, drivers got penalized. I'm sure they still do get fined if they swear on their radio.
Right.
It became super ticky-tacky, right? I mean, like, oh, you said poop. You're not allowed to say poop. You're going to get a gazillion-dollar fine, you know, right? We're going to take your owner's points away, right? It became really ridiculous and ticky-tacky, this construct of, like, you can say these words but not these words.
Can I go for a wee?
Right.
That's a findable offense.
So I think that, you know, whether or not you say in the rule books, you can't say the F word, or in the driver's meeting, you say, don't say the F word because we're going to bust you for that.
Right.
It has to be spoken out loud. So if that rule doesn't exist, you can't penalize them for it. And one man's poop is another man's F word, right? So I think that that's where what is potty mouth, what is foul language is different per culture and different per, and certainly different per driver. So, you know, there are words that you don't use. And so I'm sure there are words that I say on this podcast that you wish I didn't, but I don't know. They come out of my mouth and I don't see a problem with that. So
how the f*** that's possible.
So, exactly. You know,
so I think that
I read an article today in the British press.
Mm-hmm.
That said women use the F-bomb more than men now.
Okay, so you know what? I almost wrote this on that post and I didn't. Did you look at the data source? Really? Give me a break.
I didn't. I was having fun with it.
The data source is crap, so don't even push that crap. But after...
I didn't even look at it. I thought, oh, man, that headline's so funny. I'm going to blame it on yoga pants.
Yeah, right. I was just like, that's the craziest pile of crap ever.
Oh, that was funny.
You know, so, but I think that's a cultural thing. I think that, you know, I think even between, you know, East Coast versus Midwest versus West Coast, you hear different language used. And around where I come from here in D.C., you hear worse language than I would hear in the Midwest. You'd never hear people say those kind of things. Right. I don't know. Is that right. A judgment? Am I a worse person? I don't know. But
well, if you go off of that old man, the entire nation of Germany is F-bombing everywhere.
But again, morality is a hard thing to rule on, yeah, I guess is what I'm getting at. And so I think that whether it's written down or Charlie Whiting says, hey, gentlemen's agreement, don't say this, that's one thing.
There you go.
Again, I think the larger issue in all of this is it isn't the NASCAR situation. I only get to hear this if you put it in the broadcast. Somebody heard this
and
said,
put it out. Yeah.
Cha-ching, this will be great controversy. They had enough time to beep it, right? And then they put it out there. So this is not on Vettel, I feel at all, that if you wanted to not have this put out there, you didn't have to put it out there.
They're putting all those F-bombs out there.
You
beeping them out.
You control the broadcast,
yeah,
right?
Right.
It's not like, you know, we all have the same feed. We all get the same radio transmission. So if you didn't really want this out there, you wouldn't have put it out there. But
nah,
you
they
did
it because it was going to get a lot of controversy and a lot of people engaged. Yeah.
So I think that's what's, I think to me at the end of the day, this isn't really about Vettel. This is about the FIA and that they were just looking for some dollar signs and thought, oh, this will get people talking about the sport because why would we actually care about the actual sport of racing? Let's just talk about the controversy around it. And then Vettel used the F word and said some unkind things about Charlie Whiting.
So ultimately,
which were clearly in the heat of the moment. And I'm sure lots of people say those kind of things about Charlie Whiting in the heat of the moment and then go, all right.
Yeah,
I'm
that's
sorry,
not the
Charlie,
first time.
I didn't mean that.
That's not the first time he's heard that. So
sure not.
And you know, it was that Jean Todt was watching the race and he was very displeased, and I'm sure. And then I'm thinking somebody the FOM must have called him and said, hey, Jean, look, you know, we didn't have to broadcast that, but we did that to gain a lot of press for the sport. So we can't penalize Sebastian because we used him to generate a lot of press here. You know, that's just the reality of it.
So
because I'm Sebastian, I say, well, don't broadcast it.
Right. Exactly. Again, I have no way of hearing it. Can you listen to the radio through the app? I'm trying to remember. I've only ever used it a couple times.
I didn't buy the $40 Huggy app. I don't know.
I don't either. But I mean, again, so I mean, I think you need to be upfront with what your rules are. Follow those rules. And if you don't want people to know that your drivers use the F word, stop putting it in the TV show that we all watch that you have control over.
Right. Exactly. All right, let's talk about Ferrari.
Because how could this get any more crazy? We'll talk about Ferrari. This is going to be good.
Oh, boy. So Ferrari, this is kind of an interesting story. Okay. Before I read what Bernie said, Mr. Eccleston to me, actually, before I read what Mr. E said, there has always been this sort of ongoing narrative. I'm not saying I believe in it or Grace does or doesn't, but there's this sort of belief among fans and even pundits in the F1 paddock that Ferrari always seems to do better when there is an Anglo-Saxon element at the lead or you know, leading that team.
Okay.
Managing that team. Now, you could go back and say, well, perhaps that's because Ross Brawn and with the combination of Jean Todt took them to multiple championships. And you could say, well, you could go back to Niki Lauda time when he went in there and dragged them forward and that kind of thing. You know, you could go back across Ferrari's history and find Anglo-Saxon involvement in the team and what impact that may or may not have. I don't know. I'm not disagreeing with it, and I'm certainly not agreeing with it. I'm just saying it's out there, okay? And this is coming from a Ferrari fan. Now, what Bernie said seems to have reignited that narrative that Ferrari needs an Anglo-Saxon at the helm, or at least that it's all very Italian, if you will, all right? And what he said is, quote, "All I hope is that Ferrari get their act together and start winning races." He said, when I got Jean Todt mm-hmm. to take his position and go to Maranello, which was a bit of a risk for Jean to do, it was an all-Italian team, and they were a bit concerned about taking a foreigner. But I told them, when you win the championship, you sure will find ancestry in Jean's family that comes from Sicily. Now, it has gone back to being a very Italian team again, and it's run like an Italian team. So I don't envy Maurizio's job. I wouldn't want to do it. End quote. So,
okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, okay, right. Again, especially as a McLaren fan, first of all, I think Ferrari always gets a leg up on the rest of us. So I'm going to put that out there. Regardless of what the nationality of the person running the team is, they always get their way, right? Second of all, Maybe as an American, I feel this way, but come on, right? Just because my background is X and your background is something else, does that really mean that we don't operate the same or we don't have the same kind? We can move past stereotypes. Now, is there some truth to, like, oh, it's an Italian team or it's a Japanese team or it's an American team, right? Or it's an English team, right? There is some ethos to that, but I don't think it's so... I guess it's not so ingrained, not any more than, oh, Grace is a blonde and she must be stupid, or Todd's of a certain age, so he must be like this, or, you know,
right.
Paul's 20, so he must be a millennial and he must have a short attention span, right? Like, at some point, this must move beyond just stereotypes of what an Italian team is like, and that just having an Anglo-Saxon leader doesn't mean they're going to be great. And just because they have an Italian leadership doesn't mean they're going to be horrible. We need to rise above some stereotypes here, people.
You know, I was thinking, and correct me if I have this wrong, Dave, our very own Dave Mortimer. I think it was Dave who offered a comment on the post I ran about this that I thought was probably a little bit more pertinent to the situation. And Dave, if I was wrong on this, correct me and tell me who it was, because I don't want to steal another reader's comment that I was impressed with or that I thought was germane to the argument.
Nor do I want that to be your comment in the 500 podcast.
Right.
Todd misattributed my quote. That's why, right.
I stopped listening to FBC. The guy's a freaking idiot. So here's the thing. I believe the argument was that, yes, okay, fine, but you got to realize that the UK is really a massive, massive hub of motorsport engineering and technology. And there are tons of people in that program. And that really is sort of it's like Silicon Valley, it's Motorsport Valley over there. And this is where all the best brains go. This is, they're all trained there. They're all taught there. They all come out of there. And so the implication here is that it's not necessarily that it's Adrian Newey. It's just that this is the hub by which all of these, you know, motorsport geniuses come out of. And yes, when they go to an Italian team or a German team or whatever, they do have an impact, not because they're Anglo-Saxon or because whatever. It's because that's the hub and that's where they come from. And I think there's something to that. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, okay. So sure. But I guess if it was Sauber, that would be different, right? Because they're not in either location. I think that Ferrari is probably also able to get a lot of top talent, but I definitely see that point that if you were running a team and it's not based in England, your life is a lot harder, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's where all the support stuff is. That's where the engineers are, et cetera, et cetera. So absolutely, that's a fair thing. I guess I just always think Bernie is talking like some sort of, you know, I guess what I see here in America is a lot of times when a company is falling apart, they put a woman in charge because she'll fix everything. That's not fair. That's, you know, that's a stereotype of something that, you know, somehow she can fix it. I think that I just guess we should be able to move past just, you know, they're a bunch of arm waving Italians. But as a McLaren fan, of course, I like to perpetuate that stereotype. Yes, that Ferrari is nothing but a bunch of arm-waving Italians, right? That is how stereotyping works. But I just don't think it's that straightforward. And I think that they could have somebody who is from anywhere and, you know, they could be great or not great. I mean, I think that is a fair point that was made, you know, that of course you're gonna see more English folks in the sport that are successful because that's where all the stuff is, right? That's where you're gonna really see people succeed in this sport come from. But I don't know. It's Bernie Ecclestone. He's just trying to create a story where there's no story.
I think also his second comment was probably a little bit more to the point. And the fact, as he said, quote, probably what Maurizio desperately needs is a good backup support like Mercedes have got, for example. If he had the support that Mercedes has, they would win races for sure. I'm sure that you will see a different Ferrari next year, end quote. Right. I think there's a lot to be said of that. I have, as a Ferrari fan, I know there's some others out there listening. I've bit my lip on the whole Sergio Marchionne thing for 2 years now. Because I reckon a guy that runs Fiat, you know, Chrysler and all that, and, you know, successful at what he does or whatever, I reckon he knows a lot more about it than I do. Right. I'm starting to not bite my lip as much because I have had concerns with this all along. And, you know, his approach to Ferrari immediately when he took over was to come in and just absolutely berate the team and say a Ferrari that isn't winning isn't a Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, look, Pedro, I don't know how they do things down in Juarez, but here in Idaho, we have a little something called respect. No, I think when you start saying it's important to be careful here because those are harsh, harsh words for a team like Ferrari, a company like Ferrari.
Yeah.
And I don't think he started off, you know, he started off as, look, you know, I'm cock of the walk and I'm in charge and Luke is out and all these Baldessari and Aaron, you know, all these managers that we've just fired everybody because a Ferrari's not winning is not a Ferrari. And it's like, well, no, actually a Ferrari that doesn't win a Formula One race is still a Ferrari. And you're missing the entire point. A Ferrari is always a Ferrari. Whether it's good or bad, it is always a Ferrari. And having visited Maranello and toured that, and you can go back and read my report on it, but Ferrari and Italy are one, and they are symbiotic with each other. And I just had concerns with this on the very get-go. And I think Mr. E's right. I think Maurizio is under a tremendous amount of pressure. And I think Sebastian's actions this whole season are a tangible example of that. I think he's overdriving the cars and situation, lost his head in Mexico. He's frustrated. I think there's a lot of pressure on this team that doesn't need to be there. That's just my opinion.
I think that I hear what you're saying. I think that the thing with management is it's always difficult because, you know, some people need, a tough love and other people find that confining, right? Or you're telling me what to do or, you know, you're crushing my creativity. So, you know, and I think that as management, you know, I don't like that kind of management. That's not something that ever has worked for me. Somebody just coming in and saying you all suck. And if you don't pick it up and we don't, you know, whatever, I mean, we don't win at anything, but you know, right. If you're not winning, then we're losing and you all suck. That's never going to motivate me, but clearly it does motivate some people. But I think that you have to be flexible in your management style when you come into a company like that, that what works for the people and what motivates them, you can't just come in. If your hard-headedness or heavy-handedness doesn't inspire them to greatness, then you got to change it up because that's just going to run your team into the ground and they're going to fire you. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe some flexibility. People aren't all, we aren't all automatons, right? We all react to things differently and different things motivate us. So I think he definitely has a tough job. I think it would be very hard to come in behind, you know, Ferrari's great success with the Schumacher errors and then their not so great success. It's not a position I'd ever want to take over. But yeah, if this isn't working for your team, if Vettel's falling apart, and, you know, Kimi Räikkönen just being Kimi Räikkönen, then maybe you should change. Maybe something needs to be different.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens next year. I think if they don't make some progress forward next year, life's going to be very difficult there.
Sure.
Let's see. All right, I'm going to skip the next story, Grace, on our list because it comes up in Post of the Week, so I'll bring it up there.
Okay.
And finally, in the news, let's talk about the Ross Braun rumors. There were some rumors that Ross Braun was possibly going to accept a role with Liberty Media once they acquire the sport as their sporting director. Mm-hmm. And that has now been said to be untrue. Ross said that actually he's just been doing a bit of consulting for them. Other folks saying, well, he's just throwing water on it, but that's going to happen. And Zach Brown's going to come in as the CMO, and Ross Braun's going to come in as the COO, and Chase is going to be the CEO, and that's how it's all going to fold. It may happen. I don't know. Mr. E was adamant that he's not going anywhere, and Ross has not taken his place, and he did echo my original when I first read the suggestion that he was going to work at Liberty Media. And I think James Allen ran the piece, so hat tip to James. But I read it there, and my first reaction, Grace, was Liberty Media is going to be the commercial rights holder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that a sporting director. Maybe there's a sporting element to the commercial side that he would have a very pivotal role. Maybe they're just positioning him as a COO. I wasn't quite sure, but I kind of felt like, if anything, wouldn't Ross Braun be better off on the sporting and technical regulation side for the FIA? And there in the past, John Tott, who has been criticized about not being involved enough with Formula One, had said that maybe he might put somebody in charge of Formula One to work underneath John Tott. And I got to think, well, maybe Ross might be a good person for the FIA. And Bernie Eccleston said the same thing. He thought that Ross would make a better candidate for the FIA, not the commercial rights holder. So yeah, I don't know where it stands. Ross just said he's doing consulting for Liberty Media, but time will tell. But you'd think it was kind of an odd for him to work for the commercial and not the regulatory?
I think it depends on what he wants to do with his life, right?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. Yeah.
Right? I mean, so yes, as a fan, when I read that, I was like, please fix the rules, right? Like, didn't we just spend the first half an hour of this conversation
yep.
talking about how crappy the rules are, right? So yes, as a fan, I'm like, anything, just get Ross Braun back, right? If you can make, you know, Honda successful, you can make anything successful, right? If you can get Jensen Button a championship, you can do anything, right? So I just want Ross Braun back, right? Whatever that capacity is. But I think him as a human being, and I think if I was Ross Braun, I would much more be on the consulting Liberty Media side of things. Because then you can just say, hey, watch out for that. Or I don't know, I think that person's full of crap. Or hey, maybe this isn't the way to go. Or no, that guy's a good guy. I worked with him, right? It's kind of like
I'm sure he doesn't want to pack up everything and move to Paris.
No, I mean, he's fishing every weekend. He doesn't want to have to do this, right? So I think that's part of it, too, is that it's kind of like when Steve Matchett, because he's worked with a lot of these guys, so it's always interesting when he goes, I really can't believe that that person did that, right? Or I really can't believe that happened. Or, you know, that kind of seems right from when I was in Formula One, right? So that's a helpful insight that none of us have. So I can see if I was Liberty Media, I'd want somebody like Ross Braun because he knows everybody, right?
Right.
He's been exposed to this environment that would be new to me. And I guess he was Ross Braun. I'd much rather than in that than the headache that is the regulation side, even though I think that's where he's most suited. But I think if you are in retirement mode, which he's been in, you know, he's really shown no interest in getting back involved in the sport. That's where I would do too. I'd just tell you like, oh, here's how Bernie Eccleston rolls or, you know, Christian Horner's a nice guy or, you know, never let, you know, Max Mosley drive you anywhere. He's a horrible driver or whatever. You know what I mean? Like that kind of insight would be helpful, but I don't see him getting more involved than that.
I don't know. I can see if any of this comes out to be the case, I mean, I could see, cause we've all said all right, there's no replacing Mr. E. That just doesn't happen.
No, right. It'll just be a new person.
It's going to be more than one person in my mind. It's going to be a business.
I think that's true, too.
And I think you're going to have Chase as a CEO. I could see Zach being a CMO, marketing officer for Formula One. And I could see Ross Braun as a COO. I could see that, you know, structure being effective for Liberty Media in the long term. Now, I wrote, you know, in the editorial, if you're a conspiracy theorist, you know, the agreements are all up in 2020. Could Liberty Media be making a play to be more in control of the regulatory side? Who knows, you know? Who knows what they have up their sleeve? But anyway, that's we'll keep you posted.
So. At this time, I'd like somebody to be in charge of the regulation side of things, because I don't think anybody's in charge of that right now.
Right,
so,
right.
Sure, Liberty Media, why don't we give you a chance? Maybe you can get the regulations sorted out for this
right,
sport.
Right, right.
Go ahead.
Why not? All right. So let's hand out some awards. The first award of the podcast is always Post of the Week. Okay, I wrote a story. Ross Braun also came out in the news, and he was talking about Michael Schumacher, but he caused a little controversy, or as Paul might say, controversy, about his seven-time champion friend Michael Schumacher. He said, quote, "The family have chosen to conduct Michael's convalescence in private, and I must respect that. There are encouraging signs, and we're all praying every day that we see more of them." He said, "So it's difficult for me to say very much, and I respect the family's privacy. All I would say is that there's a lot of speculation about Michael's condition. Most of it is wrong, and we just pray and hope every day that we continue to see some progress and that one day we can see Michael out and about and recovered from his terrible injuries," end quote. Okay. And I wrote a piece about this, and with my own experience with my father, who went something very similar, and I have written at length about this, and I said, you know, wait a minute, you know, this is all perspective. This is all contextual. You know, encouraging signs doesn't mean that he's back behind the wheel and driving to the grocery store. It very well could mean he's off of an IV, or he is showing some sort of signs of recognizing faces, or who knows. But, you know, at this level, we just don't know because it's private. So, but I thought there was an interesting comment on that story that I wrote by Manny Petty, MannyPetty.
I like it.
I do too. He wrote about this, and I thought it was a thoughtful piece. He said, look, I'm a fan of Schumacher too. And he was saying, I kind of have issues with how private they've been about this. I mean, what would it hurt for the family to give you an update of truly what condition he's in, because there's millions of fans and they're all, you know, everybody's saying a bunch of misinformation and guessing at what's going on, and they could put all that to bed. I thought it was a thoughtful piece, and it's a legitimate question. And so I really appreciated him, you know, maybe saying the unpopular thing is like, okay, I respect the family's privacy, but on the flip side, you know, there's millions of fans out there and they'd like to know, you know, and I get that. I would tell you my response to that would be, because his point was Michael, you know, lived his whole life in the public eye. So why now is he not? My response to that is that technically, yes, when he was doing and working in Formula One, he was very much in the public eye. But away from the paddock, he was not in the public eye. He was very much like Sebastian Vettel. He was not like Lewis Hamilton, where he's, you know, posting a lot of pictures of his life and very social like that. So Lewis is a very outgoing, very social guy. Michael was not that way at all, actually. So he's a very private person away from the paddock. So I understand his point. I would say that when you're a family going through something like this, it changes your entire world. And people think, well, you know, maybe hopefully you get back to normal. They didn't know normal anymore. You have to redefine what normal is, because it's not the old normal. It's a new normal. And then you start praying for small steps towards the new normal, which is 24/7, 100% total care. And that's a difficult thing for a family who doesn't necessarily really want to bring all that out into the public. And to be real frank with you, I don't think they should. You think, Grace?
I think the other thing is, no, I don't think they should. Right. First of all, it's not good news, right? If he was going to the gym or driving to the grocery store, we'd all know about it. So I think part of their privacy is it's not good news, right? And that, like you pointed out, that progress in a situation like this is very different than, you know, I don't know, some other kind of progress, right? It could just be he blinked today. Yeah. Well, that doesn't really seem like progress unless you're in that situation. And maybe that is.
For the family, it is. Yeah.
Right. And I think the other thing is, too, is that while you and I and the people that listen to this podcast are all caring, nice people, there are people in this world who are not. And so I think that you have to also have that protection up of, you know, there are people that, and maybe they are even well-intended, right? You know, I mean, that, you know, they want to be helpful and their helpfulness isn't helpful, right?
Yep, yep.
So I think if you don't really have a choice, then I'm sure that in some ways they do feel like they're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but you don't really have a choice in a situation like this that, you know, you don't want to have to answer that question every time. Could you imagine every time, you know, Karina or the kids comes into the hospital, they have to answer questions every time. You know, I mean, this is every day, long term. He may never progress beyond, unfortunately,
no,
right?
No.
He may never progress beyond, I blinked at you because I recognized you as my wife, right?
That's right.
I mean,
that's right.
You know, I think that the closest you, well, I've never had somebody in this situation. I've had family members that have had dementia. And it, you know, and it can also be that kind of like, it just tears you apart, right? Because this isn't the person you know. This isn't how you wanted this to be. This isn't what you expected. But now this is the norm. What do you do? Oh, my God. All these emotions. And then you have to share that with the public. I couldn't imagine, right?
That's
so
right.
I think that as a fan, yeah, I would like to know, of course, because I care and he's somebody who's a part of my life, but I also have to respect that he's a human being and these are human beings and that most of us are provided with the luxury of not being this public, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
And you know, and that
and to
I
your
can
point,
come and
here,
go from, right.
You're saying, I'm inferring that you're saying
yeah.
a little bit that, you know, he was an incredible public figure. He's a mm-hmm. 7-time champion. And at some level, she's choosing to protect that.
Right.
You know, this is how we remember Michael.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to see him as an invalid.
No.
You know, she's protecting the Michael Schumacher that we all know and some mm-hmm. really love and some don't, but that's,
right.
she's protecting that, you know, to your point, in my case, you know, mm-hmm. it was people, I would say, well, we're seeing signs, encouraging signs and people think, oh, well, you know, then, you know, I'll give your dad a
home.
Call. You know,
right. No,
you don't get it. It's been
right.
6 weeks and yesterday was the first day he actually recognized my mother. He's
right.
been married to her for 45 years.
Right.
And he didn't know who she was for 6 weeks. Right.
Right.
So, no, he's not ready for a phone call, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, these are the things that I'm talking about. And but to your point,
yeah.
Grayson, you're saying it much better than I am.
Oh.
But she's protecting this, you know?
Right. And who wants to, I couldn't imagine, right? You know what I mean? I think that, I think as a fan, yeah, I'd like to know, but it's not good news. If it was good news,
we would know.
He'd yes. be out walking around. He'd be waving at us from a stretcher or something. You know, he'd be
right.
waving at us from his hospital window.
Right.
No news is bad news, unfortunately, in this situation.
Yeah.
And I think that this is something that is small steps, baby steps, like you said, you know, your dad's getting better. That doesn't mean he's ready for a phone call. That means, you know, he recognized
right.
your mom. So
that's right.
And that's hard. I can't imagine having to go through that publicly. So
no.
I don't think you really have an option, but I do see that as a loving, caring fan that you just want to show that
sure.
support, right? You just
you
want
do.
To be able to say, hey, this guy meant a lot to me and I want you to know that you have my support. And then again, there are people that are going to exploit that and, or don't even mean to, but you know, it's like, you know, I think that when somebody who's close to you has a loved one that dies, it's often awkward. What do you do? Like, do I bring you food? When's a good time to do that? You know,
right.
it often becomes
right.
like this extra burden to the family to now, not only do I have to deal with the fact that this loved one has passed, but now I have to deal with the fact that everybody wants to show me their love too.
Right. It's tough.
And it is hard because they are showing you your love and you want to support that. You want to take that love in, right? You want to take that support in. But equally, you're trying to juggle a lot of other stuff that you weren't prepared for either.
Yeah, that's right. That's
I just
right.
think it's complicated, I guess, is where
it
I'm
is.
Going with this.
It is. It's just very, it's a very
and,
difficult situation.
You know, and that, and I'm sure that Braun feels, that Ross Braun feels that same tension, that he wants to be able to say things are better, you know?
Yeah.
It's very human too. You want to be able to say he's better, whatever better is defined to be.
Right, right. Well, and they've adjusted, they've recorrected what normal is, and it's nothing like what we think of as normal is. So yeah, I was a huge Schumacher fan. He's very tied in with my family. My youngest daughter shares the same birthday as he does. As ironic as all this is, my dad, the day he passed away, was right after, he was in a coma, and it was, I was sitting at bedside, and I was holding his hand, and we watched the last race that Michael won a race. and it was like 15 minutes. I told him that Michael won. He was a big Schumacher fan too, and he passed away. And so Schumacher for our family is very interwoven for a whole host of reasons. He's very interwoven. So anyway, I have all the time in the world for how Korea wants to handle that. All right. On lighter notes, let's get...
Nice transition, right?
Thanks, man. Now let's laugh. So here's the deal. Yeah. This is Grace's favorite award. It happens to be the Lewis Hamilton Fashion Award.
Lewis Hamilton, Lewis Hamilton, there's no stopping him. Lewis Hamilton, Lewis Hamilton, there's no stopping him.
They do it live!
All right, Grace.
Wait, before you get into the fashion. Yeah. So, I was really so did you see the Lewis Hamilton on Ellen bit? Did you see when he was on Ellen? Okay. Before who? Austin.
Oh, Ellen.
Lewis Hamilton.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
he was on.
Yes, I did. Yes.
That's all right. So I really wanted this to be his walkout music. I thought that would have been awesome. I really wanted
that would have been awesome.
And I did enjoy when he was like, basically NASCAR sucks. And then he made this face like, did I just say that out loud?
Right.
Oops.
Right. I thought he did a good job, though.
I thought he did, too. But I did love the, how do you, because as an American Formula One fan, how do you explain to somebody how Formula One is different and, in my opinion, better than NASCAR, right, but not say that? And so I thought it was really funny that he kind of said, but it's better than NASCAR, and then he kind of bit his lip like, please don't, please don't be outside with pitchforks when this interview is over.
I know. It was pretty funny because, Ellen, is a good example. Ellen's not a big follower of Formula One, obviously.
Sure,
and she was and she was asking normal questions that an American would ask because they don't know much about Formula One.
Right.
But I thought he did a pretty good job of promoting the sport.
And then I loved her end story where she was like, her brother was there and he doesn't care about any of these, famous people or celebrities, but he was totally like, why is Lewis Hamilton here? I'm like, I feel the same way. And I turned like, holy shit, that's Lewis Hamilton. Why is he here? I have to go talk to him. I don't know who these other people are, Brad Pitt, whatever, Lewis Hamilton, I'm going to go talk to him.
I know. It's funny. It's, that's so funny. It's I was at different Formula One events in Austin or whatever, and there's just all these people, and all of a sudden I look over and it's somebody random, like Franz Tost or something. I was like, well, I don't know who all these local Austin, millionaires and business people. If that's Franz Tost, I'm going to go talk to him.
I know who he is.
I know who he is. That's awesome. So it's pretty funny. Anyway, so we felt that it would be a great injustice if we didn't give the fashion award to Lewis Hamilton for his incredible Halloween costume, which was the Joker. But Grace, this wasn't going down to Walmart and buying a Joker mask.
No, I mean the paint, the hair, the whole I was impressed. I mean, like Lewis, not like Lewis, I was impressed. There was some real whoever did his makeup was amazing.
Yeah.
That was really good.
I mean, it looked like he flew to Hollywood and had it done.
Yeah. It was definitely spot on. It was really good.
Yeah, that's impressive,
Yeah. So.
Paul Charsley is about the only other person I thought had a costume anywhere close to that. With his serial killer.
Sure. I saw him wear it in Austin. It was a good time. We went and got, breakfast waffles while he dresses, the Joker. It was a good time.
Right. Oh boy!
I first wanted the Riddler, but it was
of course, and I was the Penguin. So anyway, all right, we'll give one more award away, and that is the Matt Bishop Bravado Award. Okay, I'm giving the Bravado Award to the Canadian Grand Prix promoter François Dumontier.
All right.
That's quite a name.
You know, I'm just going to call you Cobblepot from now on, since you're the Penguin.
Oh, yeah.
That was the Penguin's actual, like, last name, right?
Right. Cobblepot.
I'm just going to call you hashtag Cobblepot from now on. That's you.
Yeah, I like it. Speaking of names, I think our own Dave Mortimer, maybe Paul, or even Tom.
Yeah.
Tom Dumontier. Oh, I like Tom Firth, though. That's because I like to say Tom Firth the Fifth.
That's Firth the Fifth, right.
Paul Dumontier. Ooh, that's got a real professional race car driver ring to it, doesn't it? So anyway, here's the deal.
But he already had one. Charzolini's pretty good.
Charzolini's good.
The one he came up with himself was pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Paul Charzolini, the Italian race car driver.
Exactly.
I like it. The Canadian Grand Prix promoter said that here's just a little reaction about Lance Stroll. While the rest of you are beating the heck out of him for being a paid driver, the promoter said, quote, "Ever since the rumor had been coming out that Lance was coming, the phone has been ringing at the office." Ooh.
Oh.
"I'm sure the fans will show up at the track to support Lance big time. Like at Belgium this year when Max Verstappen raced, the promoter said the ticket sales went up because of Max. We hope it's going to be the same thing in Montreal. We've got a crowd that knows racing, that have been here for a long time, are really supportive of our race, and they will be there. Hopefully they will increase the popularity. That will increase the popularity of racing in general, not just F1 and Quebec and Canada." End quote. He's saying this because there was an asterisk next to the Canadian Grand Prix in the provisional calendar for 2017. He's saying, just like Max, Lance coming on board is going to just, you know, tickets are going to go through the roof, which I probably do believe. Although, I got to be honest with you, if he isn't, I mean, Max is a bit of a special case.
Yeah.
You know, if
Lance... We all know his dad, right? That's a very different...
Yeah, and Max is a hell of a race car driver already at 19. If Lance doesn't come in and measure up to the Max Verstappen wow factor, I don't know how long that ticket sale increase thing will happen.
I just think of if I'm in charge of marketing for Montreal and I said, okay, team, what's our plan for this year's Grand Prix? And somebody went, "Oh, Lance Stroll, you know, we got him. We got Lance this year." I'd be like, okay, we need a better idea. Like, that is not something that I'd want to hang my hat on as a marketing tool, as we have a driver from our neck of the woods. That's not solid enough, right?
Here's a message to Canada. We had one, Scott Speed. Yeah, didn't do much.
Yes, who didn't really work out. But having been to Montreal, it's great. I don't know how they – I mean, there's not really an empty seat around. So I highly – whether or not there's a Canadian in the car or not, go to Montreal if you can. It's great, and you can take the metro everywhere, and it's a good time.
That's
You know, I just think that, you know, again, if I was in charge of marketing, not good enough.
Oh, you caught me completely off guard.
Not good enough, damn it. Not good enough.
There you go. Yes. Thank you. That's how I would feel. Like, that's great. That's probably helpful, but not what I'm hanging my marketing strategy on.
Right. So if it was me, I'd say, okay, Lance Stroll, okay, could we call JV and have him come and kind of hang out and with Lance and interview him? And then maybe we have two Canadians there. And, you know, JV is a world champion, and that always helps. So.
Sure.
Yeah. So anyway, Bravado Award, likening Lance Stroll already.
That's right.
To the Max Verstappen impact on ticket sales. I think that's a positive thinking.
Yes. That is a lot of bravado.
It is. Because Max, you know, he's a whole different class. So we'll see. All right, Grace. Brazilian Grand Prix coming up. Not much to play for between the Nico, the Rosberg, and the Hamilton. What is your podium finish for the Brazilian Grand Prix and your first out?
I just want to have a little tangent that is not completely related, but not completely unrelated.
Okay, sure.
So whoever is in charge of the graphics for the broadcast needs to be fired. Their infographics are the worst. So I already hate the DRS one, which has information on three axes that makes no sense. And then they had the one at the beginning of this race where it was the point differences versus Nico and Lewis. Mm-hmm. Made no sense. I literally had it, like, I understand they're trying to show the swing of the points between Lewis, that it's not just like Nico's been dominated or Lewis has been dominated, but it really is not a helpful infographic at all. And I don't know what the points mean. All it seems to tell me is that, you know, in three races, Lewis Hamilton can catch up to any lead Nico Rosberg has. So he better get his shit together and fast, because Lewis is already, you know, a race into his three race lead. But that person needs to be fired. And I'm sure that I am not the only person that feels about that way about the graphics. That, because the whole point is, if a graphic is supposed to help you digest information faster, right?
Right.
If I have to pause a graphic, this is what I do for a living. Like, if I had to pause the graphic and look at it and try to figure out what the hell you're trying to convey to me with this graphic, you failed, right? I don't understand. So anyway, whoever's in their graphic department, if you happen to be listening to this, you're fired. You're doing a horrible job with their graphics. I'm not understanding any of the information you provide, because really, what you need is both data points of what is interesting is Lewis and Rosberg's championships interacting with each other, right? Because if one of them comes in first, one of them comes in second, that's one thing. But what if one of them comes in first and the other one is a DNF? Well, that's different. And that graph didn't really show that information, right?
Right.
Unless you have a great memory, you really don't know, oh, well, why is Nico ahead in that race? Oh, well, right. because Lewis had a DNF. But you can't see that from that graphic. So I'm just putting that out there, that graphics, they really need to be working on that and make ones that make sense. Maybe pre-test them before you put them up on the screen. Maybe ask a couple of people around the office, like, what do you think this graph is trying to tell you? And if they go, I don't know, it looks like a bunch of random bullet points all joined together by a line, you failed.
If they say, I don't know, let me go get my abacus. Yeah, not good.
Right. I guess. I work in data. Infographics are the bane of my existence. So, but yeah. Work a little harder. It needs to make sense. Okay, so that said, my picks.
Yes.
So for this race, first and first out were the easiest, right? I'm going to go with Lewis Hamilton, mm-hmm. and my first out has to be Massa, because it's Brazil. It's his last season. How can I not pick Massa as first out, right? Poor guy. And especially because somebody once said that you can tell who Bernie Eccleston wants to win the championship by where the race is, by where the last race is. And for I mean, I started watching this in like 2000. I think it's always been in Brazil, and then they added Abu Dhabi, but Moss has never won the championship. He got pretty darn close, but he's never won it. So, I don't know how that theory worked out for Bernie Eccleston. So definitely Lewis Hamilton, definitely Moss first out. Oh, I always hate this because it's always the same. I always end up picking, you know, either Nico Rosberg and Sebastian Vettel or Vettel and Nico Rosberg. Oh, I think I'm going to go Lewis Hamilton, Nico Rosberg, Sebastian Vettel, first out Massa.
Okay, fair enough. As I sit here now, mm-hmm. I'm thinking Lewis Hamilton, Nico Rosberg, Daniel Ricciardo.
Right.
And my first out, taking your lead, I'm going with Massa at home.
Well, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention that somehow I'm now top of the F1BC points.
Yes,
so
you are. You have taken the lead.
I when Tony texted me after the race and was like, I think you're now the lead. I'm like, that's right.
I know.
It's right. Me and Lewis Hamilton, it only takes me three races and I'm gonna win this thing.
I know.
And
I couldn't believe it. You know what I'd said to him?
How the f*** that's possible?
That's right. I want to talk to F and Charlie Whiting about this.
I know. And Charlie is not doing his job.
Then I thought, you know, this will be my first legitimate win if that happens. Who knows? It probably won't happen. But if it did, and he's like, didn't you win one? I was like, yes, but only because Michael Schumacher was my first out. I don't feel like that's how this is supposed to work, right? You should not win the point standings because your first out pick is really good.
And consistent, yeah.
right, and consistently first out. And I feel like winning it while picking people who are winning seems more like it. But I will take this as a small victory that at some point in the season, I am leading.
There you go. It works. Excellent. Well, that is our picks, folks. That means at the end of the podcast, Be sure to stop by the website, though, and share your opinion. Just do it with decorum and civility. Also, if you listen to the beginning of this podcast, go ahead and send us those in emails, nc@formulaoneblog.com, and put 500 in the subject and answer those two questions. And we'd love to hear from you. Again, next week will be Podcast 500. It will be a race review like normal. And then Podcast 501, we will officially celebrate our 500th podcast, and we're going to come up with some different things, some fun things to do. So, but we want to make it about you, so make sure you do that as always. And in this week, huge thank you to those of you that donated. One person in particular donated a very nice amount, and I got to tell you, not to get too graphic, but whew, boy, did that come in handy. I mean, like days. It came in handy. So I needed that, and it was great. So you saved FBC. So anyway, thank you so much for doing that and for your donations, as always. It's a huge, huge help. And if you like the podcast, go over to iTunes, give us a good rating, and then we'll be back next week to do it all over again. But until that time, this is Todd, a.k.a. Negative Camber, saying so long, Grace.
See you in a couple weeks.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
Brilliant! 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 Great job, guys! Great job!
Well done, Wang. Well done.
Excellent work. Fantastic. There it is.
Guys, brilliant, guys. Great job. Great job, all of you.
I love winning. I just love racing it.
Maybe Lewis spent a little too much time with Ron Dennis.